This public radio podcast is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, meeting the challenges of a changing world, online at shrm.org, and by KeyBank Capital Markets, specializing in corporate and investment banking solutions for established and growing mid-sized companies. Visit key.com/KBCM.
Has anyone driven a Ford lately?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Ford has tried and tried to turn things around, but something always seems to break down. Now the Detroit News says Ford may lay off about 2,000 people, 10 to 12% of its workforce. Last week, Ford said it's cutting production and that it won't make a profit by next year, which was the goal. Gas prices are a killer for the SUV and truck business. But the price of oil has fallen $6 this week. It's at $127 a barrel this morning. I wouldn't get too excited, but there is reason to think the price drop might stick. Here's Jeremy Hobson.
Analyst Tom Cloza at the Oil Price Information Service says just look at the calendar. For 23 of the last 26 years, he says, the peak in oil prices has come right before Memorial Day.
History's on our side here, although this has been a year that's thrown us quite a few head fakes. So it's a little bit premature to say that maybe that big bull run for the first part of 2008 is over.
Now, there are all sorts of things that drive the price of oil: the strength of the dollar, speculation, and lately, dropping demand in the U.S.
We're also getting the sense now that maybe the rest of the world is slowing down a little bit as well. $135 for crude was an awfully high number.
In other words, don't think of this as the start of a bear market, rather a correction. In terms of what's ahead, Cloza says,
I expect chaos, but I'm tired and I would really welcome some order right now.
In Washington, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Despite the drop in oil prices, Wall Street's gains are modest this morning. So far, the Dow is up 21 points to 12,569. The NASDAQ is up 3. The S&P 500 has gained 1 point. In Asia, the markets were some up, some down. European shares are definitely higher, as much as 1.5%. Our sign of the times for today? The Dollar Tree reported a 14% increase in profits. The Senate is about to start debating a cap-and-trade program for carbon emissions. All three of the presidential candidates support this idea. Commentator Robert Reich looks at how those plans differ.
With John McCain now on board for a cap-and-trade system, it's a certainty that we'll have a president next year who wants to address global warming by imposing an overall cap on U.S. carbon emissions, which will drop annually. The trade part of the equation is that companies that find efficient ways to cut emissions can sell the unused portions of their permits to others. But look more closely, and you see a big difference between McCain and the Democratic candidates on how the permits are allocated. McCain's proposal would give the lion's share to companies that are now the biggest polluters. This does have some logic to it. After all, as the overall cap tightens each year, the biggest polluters face the largest challenges in cutting emissions. By contrast, Senators Obama and Clinton have both proposed allocating permits through an auction. Under this system, every company, large or small, would have to buy rights to pollute. As a result, the biggest polluters would have to pay the most, thereby providing them with the greatest incentive to cut emissions right from the start. This makes more sense. Our atmosphere belongs to all of us, and polluters should have to pay to use it. The citizens of Alaska and Alberta, Canada, get yearly dividends from the oil companies that take away their natural resources. Why shouldn't the same principle apply when industries use the biggest common resource of all? The money they pay for permits could be returned as yearly dividends to every American family. Now, it stands to reason that if polluters have to pay for the right to pollute, some of these costs might be passed on to consumers in the form of higher prices. But the yearly dividend checks would offset any price increases. So next time you hear about cap and trade, ask the all-important question: how are the permits allocated? A carbon auction gets my bid.
Robert Reich's latest book is called Super Capitalism. He has endorsed Barack Obama. Your thoughts are always welcome at marketplace.org. This is the Morning Report for Wednesday, May 28th on Marketplace.org. These are taxing times for the Swiss bank UBS. It's been hammered by huge subprime losses, and now the bank is embroiled in a tax evasion scandal in the U.S. In fact, the bank has repeatedly told some of its staff not to travel to the U.S. for fear of arrest. From our European desk in London, Stephen Beard has more.
UBS has apparently told more than 50 bankers to steer clear of the U.S. All of them worked for a former UBS private banking unit catering for very rich Americans. A former senior executive of that unit is already in trouble. He's been charged with helping a billionaire dodge his U.S. taxes. Reports of UBS's travel ban suggest there could be further problems looming. Jeff Goldfarb is with the financial website Breaking Views.
UBS might have been able to say this was a lawsuit brought against one man who used to work for them and really not such a big deal, but the steps that they're taking, it sounds like they're taking today, would make it seem as though this investigation could expand.
UBS has written off $37 billion in subprime losses, but says Goldfarb, the U.S. tax investigations could be more damaging. They go to the heart of UBS's main business, managing the assets of the super wealthy. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
The Nobel Prize is probably the most coveted award in science. It was named for the Swedish industrialist Alfred Nobel. Now another wealthy entrepreneur from Scandinavia wants to give something back. Today, the first Kavli Prize will be awarded, and it comes with $1 million. Janet Babin reports from our innovations desk at North Carolina Public Radio.
Fred Kavli is a Norwegian-born businessman who made a fortune in sensor technology. But the California resident always loved science and wanted to give back.
I've long thought that I want to do something of long-range benefit to humankind.
Part of his legacy will be the Kavli Awards. They recognize creativity in nanoscience, neuroscience, and astrophysics. The winners were chosen by an independent panel of researchers, and the prizes have no strings attached.
We are letting them do whatever they wish to do with the money, so we are not telling them what to do.
I guess that's part of the joy of winning the Kavli Prize, huh?
Absolutely, it should be.
Kavli says he wants to fund basic research at a time when governments and universities are pulling back. The prizes will be awarded every 2 years. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
A lot of shareholder meetings today, a few of them quite interesting, like Netflix and Blockbuster. Jennifer Collins has more on those two.
Once upon a time, Netflix wooed Wall Street with its charming business model.
My lady, we are the romance movie from Netflix. We hope our presence will be to your liking.
There's a movie waiting for you at home.
Netflix still leads the movie by mail market with 8 million subscribers. Blockbuster holds court over the movie rental business with 20 million customers. Both companies are trying to fend off competition from Apple and Amazon's growing business in online movies. Netflix is hosting its Investor Day in San Francisco. The company has warned about flat growth, but it's trying to stay in the game by unrolling a TV set-top box. It would stream movies off the internet. Blockbuster is courting shareholders in New York. Analysts expect Blockbuster to give more details about its bid to buy Circuit City. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
The country's largest dollar store reports its profits today. That would be Dollar Tree. Got us thinking, in these tough economic times, what can you buy with a dollar? Elisa Roth went to find out.
At Jack's 99-cent store in Midtown Manhattan, you can find gift wrap, hair accessories, foot powder, canned goods, party favors, all for less than a dollar. Anthony Graves is buying frozen pot pies. He says he started coming here about 9 months ago to find an alternative to Manhattan's expensive lunches.
I can get a good lunch in here much cheaper than what I can get on the street, and I get a better selection. I can have a meal here for under $3.
Which he points out would be a stretch, even at McDonald's. Lunch isn't the only thing Graves buys here.
You know, I mean, it's great. There's a lot of stuff in here that you can't get like in a supermarket at these prices.
He's not the only new convert seeking out bargains among the dollar store bins. Jack's manager guesses his store has about 10% more customers than it did before, and competitor Dollar Tree recently reported it was seeing more and bigger transactions. But the dollar store model's not a sure bet when times get tough. Patrick McKeever's an analyst at MKM Partners.
The problem is that they're seeing the low end, the lower end of their customer base, almost getting pushed out of the store entirely by gas at $4 a gallon. So they're losing some customers.
And prices are going up for vendors, too. In turn, they're charging dollar stores more. McKeever says that's something analysts predicted would happen.
That inflation would eventually catch up with them. And right now we're in a period of pretty significant inflation.
He says there are ways for stores to get around it, like putting fewer items in a package or finding suppliers in other, cheaper countries, say Vietnam instead of China. Question is how much longer these stores can hold out. Many are already charging more than a dollar for some items. They could just change their names, but then Jack's $5 store doesn't have quite the same ring to it. In New York, I'm Alisa Roth for Marketplace.
The leader of Taiwan's ruling party met with Chinese President Hu Jintao today in Beijing. This doesn't happen often. Taiwan split from the mainland in 1949, and the heads of the ruling parties haven't met since then. Now they're talking economic cooperation. Lisa Chow reports from Beijing.
This latest round of high-level meetings is part of a slow-moving process with big implications. It could eventually mean mainland Chinese would be free to visit Taiwan anytime they want. It could also mean they could fly there directly. Right now, you have to stop in Hong Kong on every leg when traveling between the mainland and Taiwan. It's a big nuisance for regular business travelers from the island. Direct flights would shorten and cheapen the ride for Taiwan investors who have poured billions of dollars in China since the late 1980s. Chinese leaders have already expressed their support for Taiwan's proposal for direct weekend flights, and Beijing may also agree to expand the number of mainland tourists allowed to travel to the island. This is all good news for the United States. Warming relations between mainland China and U.S. ally Taiwan could remove one of Asia's biggest potential flashpoints. In Beijing, I'm Lisa Chow for Marketplace.
Here's our real estate ad of the day. A lovely brick and stone Victorian, circa 1897, is for sale in the beautiful state of Maine. It's 14,000 square feet, has a really first-rate security system, and it's only $200,000. It's the Somerset County Jail, and it comes with the razor wire. The county hopes somebody will buy it and turn it into an art gallery or maybe a restaurant. Perhaps call it Bread and Water. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott J. Gal. Thanks for listening.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.